All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
Let's finish strong.
We're good. All right, so obviously we are coming to you from a little bit later in time. No, we didn't try to use a time machine and alter anything.
Ooh.
No. We're,
did we
we're
go
later.
Forward in time or backward
we're
in time?
Later
That's
in
true.
Time because we already know that we effed up the last two attempts at this podcast. You know, I think that nature being, and you guys, you could probably comment on this better, is that we seem to always have the most amount of technical difficulties on some of the best podcasts.
It's weird how that works, right? It's
yeah.
Technology is supposed to make life easier, but it seems like half the time it does the opposite. But on the other hand,
yeah,
look at this amazing backdrop, everybody. I'm at school. I'm learning about apples and bananas. I mean, this is a win as far as I'm concerned.
Listen, I will tell you that I am quite impressed with the focus on the apple. He is taking amazing notes, doing his work
right?
So quietly, and no problems.
It's like we're not even here. And the banana yeah. needs glasses. So, you know, who knew they were nearsighted? But
yeah. Well, they
could
be
that mystery has been solved. Or yeah. farsighted. That's true. That's true.
That's right. We don't know. But, you know,
I didn't realize that the background was moving.
Yeah.
Until just now.
So I, you know, who knew potassium had such a eyesight issue, you know? I never knew. Anyhow, so but when we left off last, one of the things I was saying is that, you know, what I love most about the Speed Academy channel, and yes, I guess I fall probably into the majority target demo. I don't want to say target, but the majority demo of your channel. And that's because I'm slightly older. I have maybe a little bit more expendable income. I like cars, and I'm already past the stage where I want everything to look super aftermarket. Like, I want it to look good, clean, OEM plus. And that's what you guys do, I think, best. But the educational value that your channel brings along, and I believe that this comes from having that extended time period of being magazine editors, is just such a big thing for me when I consume your content.
Yeah, you're right. We do sort of take a more, I don't know if mature is the right word, but we our builds are not like, you know, we don't build cars like a 20-year-old because we're not 20-year-olds. And
right.
and that's probably part of our success with a demographic of your age and
yeah.
part of our lack of success maybe with the, you know, 14 to 21-year-olds. And that just comes with the territory. I mean, everyone, if you're in this hobby long enough, I think your style evolves and we've sort of evolved into preferring very sort of a clean builds that have some OEM flavor to them, but are still like, you know, a significant improvement over factory performance levels, if you want to call it that. So hopefully without completely ruining the actual usability of the car, because it's very easy to go down that road. I've done it lots myself where, you know, you take what was a very comfortable road car and in the pursuit of performance, turn it into a terrible road car that's like really good at the racetrack, but it's terrible everywhere else. So,
oh yeah. Oh, that's my specialty.
You know how that goes.
That's yeah? my specialty. Listen, I was thinking the other day about every single car that I had where I felt like there was a checklist of things you got and you had to do on the first day of owning a car, right? I used to have to take out all unnecessary interior pieces that, because clearly that adds so much weight.
Oh yeah,
I had to take out the AC. I'm not going to say that I did or did not do this, but some people might just cut the line.
Oh my God!
And just let everything explode. I mean, remember, we're talking about 20 years ago. I'm not saying I did that. I'm just saying
I'm calling the EPA right now, bro.
Well, no, I'm not saying I did that. I'm just saying some people might have done that. I would never do that.
No, you would never do that. Exactly.
But you know, and then you know, you had to get rid of the AC compressor because that's weighing you down. You know, in earlier years, you may have even caught me a time or two, you know, taking off the power steering pump and shortening up the belt because, you know, reducing parasitic lag by, you know, just going through and putting a loop on the rack, you know, because this way on day two of owning the car, I could make sure that it absolutely was difficult to turn. It had no AC.
So
and it made a lot of noise when you drove. And that was, to me, the way to get a build started.
Nothing wins over the ladies more than getting into a car that has no AC, no heater core either. You got to delete the heater core. That's key. Has no interior left. So it's like, you know, driving around in a rattle can. And yet I did that for the longest time. I think just because everything that I was focused on was about, you know, going a few tenths of a second faster at the racetrack when it was still my daily driver. And I was willing to live with that for a long time, but I've kind of outgrown that now. So, and I mean, I can also afford to have a dedicated track car and a nice road car, which, you know, the Flexus, for example, if you followed that build, I love that thing because it's just a big comfy highway sofa. And we added just enough style and just enough performance to that car to make it better without making it worse. So, you know, that felt like a win to me. And on the other hand, we're about to build a couple of Hondas that we will probably completely ruin by gutting them and case swapping them and trying to make them faster with three that make your eardrums bleed. So,
Well,
you know, we haven't completely outgrown that yet, but
I don't
we're
think
trying. We're trying.
Case swaps constitute as making them worse. Everything else, I guess. But, you know, it's just it's so funny when I think about that. Like my girlfriend then, my wife now, how much torment I must have put her through making her ride in the passenger seat of cars that you couldn't hear yourself talk when you were driving them. And then to make it better, Dave, you know, we put these big – I don't know if you remember the days of audio that just couldn't be big enough. I mean,
oh yeah,
you know, yeah. I mean,
400-pound sub box in the trunk. That's right.
We deleted the whatever to put 400 pounds of subs in the back. But like,
yeah.
But you know, then we got smart and we were just doing doing high end component speakers, right, with like one little amp because we didn't want to weigh it down. But when I think about the
bazooka,
crap,
you had to have a bazooka box. The bazookas in the trunk. You remember those?
Yeah, the tubes. Oh my god.
The tubes. Yeah, the tubes.
Yeah,
those were the best.
The bass tubes. Yeah. So there's certainly a level of offness that I had, I think, in my earlier years. And a lot of people in the stage now, you know, that may be something that they're still into. And I would say, listen, every person and every car enthusiast almost deserves the rite of passage to climb those ranks. You know what I mean?
100%.
You can't appreciate what an OEM build is supposed to feel like until you've been at the point where, like, I mean, for me, I think about, there's three cars that come to my mind that I had owned and really wish that I had never done half the things I did to them because they took cars that made, they were cars that were streetable that I could have kept streetable even though they were wicked fast, but no, I had to put cages in them, you know? And then every time I try to fit my oversized rear end into the car, you know, I'd have to jump over a door bar or, you know, I mean, like, and then God forbid you needed to actually work on something that was like between the bars, you know, I mean, you'd have lumps for days. Yeah. So not
listen,
the good lumps for days, you know.
our wives are very tolerant. I drove across the continent in my gutted EG hatchback with a roll cage in it to compete in a NASA event called the Open Track Challenge. It was kind of like NASA's version of One Lap of America. They did it on the West Coast.
Yeah,
I did that in, I want to say, 02 or 03. So this was before some of you listeners were born.
Right.
And we drove out there in that gutted race car with no radio, no AC, no heat, on like teen RA suspension with 1,000-pound springs. And we did that for 3 weeks because it was like a week to drive out there, a week to race, and a week to drive back. And somehow my marriage survived that. So,
God bless her. That's how you know you have a keeper, Dave.
Appreciate the women in your lives who put up with this horrible hobby we've got going on here. But
you just needed a lot of preparation age after that.
you did, and you needed to stop at a lot of good restaurants to make up for riding in that car for so many hours. But. When I meet young guys at the racetrack, though, I never discourage them from going down that path of like ruining their car, because like you said, I think it really is a rite of passage, and it's part of the process of discovering what, you know, build style suits your wants and your needs. And when you're young and you want to go fast, that's probably the right build path for you. And when you get to be old and gray and you want a highway sofa, you build a Flexus.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Do you think that your channel, like, do you guys, when you and Pete kind of brainstorm, or when you talk about channel direction, do you really emphasize the fact that you want to put as much educational information into it? Or is that just the byproduct of the way your career has kind of gotten to this point and how you display information?
We do talk about that a lot. And, you know, for us, it's like, how do you strike the right balance of educational and entertaining? Because, as you know, on YouTube, if you're not engaging the audience, if you're not entertaining the audience, they're just going to click away and go and watch something else. So you do have to balance that as much as you can if you want to keep the views up. So, but we certainly want to offer educational content too, because we know our viewers are not just there to be entertained. They also maybe want to learn something or just see how we did a job that we may have approached differently than they've approached it. So, you know, we try to use different tools. Like, we just bought a vapor honer recently so that we could clean parts more thoroughly. And, you know, rather than, say, taking them to a blaster or dipping them or using other ways, it's just fun to try new tools and show people what kind of results you get from that kind of stuff. So, you know, Pete and I also come from, like, technical editor backgrounds. Pete's first job at Modified Mag was as the technical editor.
Yeah.
And then when he started running the magazine as the editor in chief, I was doing a lot of technical stuff. He always continued to do technical stuff because that was really what it interested him most. So we both kind of come from that background where we want to do technical content anyway, but we do have to try to balance that as much as we can with our stuff. So, you know, we don't go too deep on it for fear of losing those viewers, but, you know, luckily for us, there are places we can point our viewers if they want to go deeper on tech. Like, if you followed our Evo 6 build, when we did that engine build, we followed HP Academy's engine building course.
Yeah,
I'm sure you guys know who HP Academy are, but
yeah, sure.
Out of New Zealand, they offer really top quality educational content on how to build engines, how to tune engines, how to build wiring harnesses. They just released a course on, like, how to tune your suspension, you know, how to do alignments, how to look at data from your car at the racetrack. Like, anything you want to learn, they offer really high quality stuff. So we thought, let's team up with them on this engine build. We'll show our viewers how their course works, and we'll show them the end result of our engine build. And that engine ran amazing on the street, by the way. After we built it, we broke it out on the street with no timing in it, and it ran like a honey of a motor. And I was so pumped on that car. And then we went to the dyno, and we put about 4 times too much ignition timing in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when it went kaboom. So
yeah. Yeah, it's funny thing about cylinder head pressure.
Yes.
when you have enough combustion pressure, bad things don't seem to always go well.
No, it was not a good day for us. And I was really heartbroken because Pete and I put so much time and effort into building that motor properly following HPA's process. And
yeah,
we really wanted to show people that you can do this, and we did do it, and it worked great
until
on break-in.
Yeah,
until we nuked it by being dumbasses. So
that
was a pretty big bummer from us, but I think the viewer understood what happened. So
that is a tough process. I think HP Academy is such a good resource for people out there. Yes, it costs a little bit money, but if you can think of the fact that when you purchase that, you'll have access to it, right? You don't have to watch it all in a single sitting. You don't have to absorb it all. And,
that's right.
You know, they do put a lot of effort into going into great detail. So it allows you to kind of use as a video reference, forward this way, rewind, go back, watch this part one more time. And if you think about, let's say, the $129, and they're always wanting different deals and specials. I see that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You think about what they provide for the amount of money. You really couldn't find that any place else that has collectively put it together in a very chronological but meaningful and in-depth way. You'd have to look at a lot of different videos to find a lot of different things.
Exactly. It does away with all of that, and you can really trust the content that they're putting out, because Andre, the guy behind it all, is a very, very accomplished racer. He held world records with his Evo drag car for years.
Yeah.
He's now, like, winning races in his FRS track car. Very, very bright guy. I've been really lucky to have some, you know, good conversations with him over the years. And there's few people I would trust more to learn this kind of stuff than Andre. And not only is it like really educational content in terms of like the theory, they have these like what they call worked examples, which are basically a step-by-step process of how to build this engine. So you can follow their steps all the way through. They hold your hand essentially through the whole thing. And as long as you follow that process, you will build a good engine, or you will build a good harness. So, yeah. Or you will tune the ECU properly. So it's really impressive the way it combines theory and very practical, you know, step-by-step instructions basically on how to do these relatively complex things, but they break it down in a very understandable way. So sorry for the long-winded ad for HP Academy, everyone. This is not a paid advertisement. We are not selling out here. But if you want a discount code, you can go to the video description of any of Speed Academy's videos. Right. And I think we have like a $75 off discount code in the description. Yeah. So there you go.
No, listen, everyone. I think it's good information. Like I said, you know, we're very much on the thought train of giving information and putting out educational content and whatever means. And that's not for our profit, right? Like that's for the benefit. And so if it's a good source, it's a good source. Right. Yeah,
100%.
And I think I'll be honest with you. Like, I think that one of my, I don't know if it's my favorite Speed Academy video, it's not the right word, but one of the ones I feel like I really needed to watch and I had to watch was when you guys did that rotary engine. Because I have always been just enough of a, and I think if you've been around cars for a long time and you've built a lot of different cars, you may have gotten to this stage where I know how rotaries work. I know kind of that they're not really my wheelhouse. But but aside from that, I don't have a lot of real good working experience on the inner structure or, you know, kind of the assembly of one of those engines. So watching you break down, the RX-8 and kind of go through that, it was a really big thing to me. And you know what's funny is that, yes, there are some parts that I go, oh, I'm not sure. But after watching that video, I say to myself, and I'm at a level, I have assembled probably 25, 30, 40 engines in my tenure here, right?
What? That's a good flex. That's a proper flex. I like
no,
it.
No, but it's not a flex. It's just, but what I'm saying is I came from that point of yes, I know engine assembly, but
definitely a different animal for sure.
Yeah. So watching that video, seeing things about how the rotors get put together, you know, how important Vaseline is,
and that's
that's not for when you mess it up.
It's not for when you have to pay the bill to build that motor either. They're not cheap engines to build anymore.
Yeah, right. It's one of those videos that you guys put out there, I think, that does a great amount of service to a lot of car people and may even lead to them exploring into the dark side, of the Wankel engine, right?
Yeah, I hope so. I have a deep, nerdy love for rotary engines just because they're so different.
Yeah.
And, you know, having owned an RX-8 and really gone down the rotary path pretty deeply, building a motor for that car during the magazine years with Joe, the same guy that features in all of our rotary engine builds now on the channel. I just think they're fascinating. I think they're just such a unique take on a combustion engine. And they're so simple. There's so few moving parts inside of them. I love the multiplier plank factor of like, you know, for every three rotations of the crankshaft, there's only one rotation of the rotary. So even though the motor's revving at 9,000 RPM, the rotors themselves are only spinning at 3,000 RPM, which is why they feel so smooth, even though you're spinning them to a very high RPM level. And there's just so much cool tech that goes on there. And yet they are delicate, unique creatures that need the right sort of maintenance and the right sort of attention to detail. They're definitely not for everyone. You know, they have cold start issues. They have all kinds of other issues that are well documented. So I think you have to be a very dedicated rotary guy to make that ownership experience enjoyable and reliable. But if you're into it, I love them. I'm a huge fan. Just the noise that a rotary engine makes, it's so cool and special. Some people hate them, but most people hear it and they're like, wow, that's cool and different. I really like the way that sounds.
Yeah, it's strange in the sense that it almost seems like it's a overpowered lawnmower engine a little bit. you know?
Yeah.
It has that very, you know,
two-stroke sound, yeah.
Yeah, that very Harley 60-degree off kind of, you know what I mean? Like,
and a can full of angry bees sort of sound, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Mr. Apple, did you get all that down?
He's taking notes. He's taking notes, yes.
Yeah.
And he is aware of the fact that Wankel was a member of the Nazi Party. So, you know, keep that in mind, everybody.
That makes
sense. True story.
That, yes. I know it's a true story, but that does make more sense why the blue rectangle in the back is watching the apple so carefully.
Oh, it's true. You got to keep an eye on the apple. They're shifty.
Yeah. So where do you think, in kind of starting to wrap some of this stuff up, where do you think the Speed Academy channel will be in a few years from now? And I say that, and I want to offer a little bit of clarification to that question. I'm sure that your builds will continue to encompass a lot of, you know, everyday vehicles that are obtainable. Maybe, you know, I don't believe that your channel is going to go to the JDM Legends route forever and ever. It's a period.
No, you're right.
Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of other things on the vehicle agenda, right? Are we talking about electric vehicles getting there at some point? Are we talking about, you know, graduating to different types of vehicles? What's your overall thought of where you guys will gravitate toward?
It's a good question. I mean, we obviously have a garage full of cars right now, most of which need to get built. So our next like year to year and a half is already kind of mapped out.
Yeah.
And you'll be familiar with some of those cars just from, you know, us asking for wheels, or you watching the channel and seeing the shop tour and kind of seeing some of the stuff we've got tucked away in the back. So,
yeah.
But longer term, we certainly want to do an electric car conversion. That's something that we really feel like, you know, it's going to be part of the hot rodding scene, the enthusiast scene for the foreseeable future. So why not get in early, learn about how that all works? And we did learn some about that, having documented our buddy Sasha's electric conversion of his Lotus Evora years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really early days, man. Like, he did that before really anybody else was doing that kind of stuff. And he figured out the electronic side of it, which is the most tricky side, with some help from someone in Europe. I forget the name of the company, but someone in Europe had figured out how to basically hack Tesla's control units, or build a piggyback unit for their control units to give a tuner like full control of everything.
Mm.
That was a really key part of the componentry, I guess you could say. But having seen him do it, it made it seem achievable, even for, you know, regular guys like us who aren't mad scientists on the level of someone like Sasha. And now that companies like AEM are bringing out control units to make EV conversions much, much easier. And AEM is a company that we work with a lot. So you can imagine that they might be saying, hey, guys, build an electric car. So it's certainly something that is on our radar. I don't think it's going to happen next year just because we have too many builds already in the queue. But
yeah,
I think 2023, we will almost certainly do an electric car conversion. And, you know, Pete being Pete, he's going to want to do it to like a 911. And Dave being Dave, I'm going to want to do it to like an AW11 MR2 or something like that. So
yeah.
Or you know what? Maybe an EG or like something front wheel drive. I think that would be cool too. You know, the temptation is always to think, oh, let's put the motor in the back and make it rear wheel drive. But
yeah,
like a Mark II Golf would be really cool. I think an EF or an EG would be really cool. There's lots of cool front wheel drive cars we could have fun with, aren't there?
Yeah.
I mean, there's also a Bag Bob.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that would be cool.
So anyhow, no. So, but like, yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. We had Lawson from AEM on a few months ago. And we were actually talking about a lot of their battery technology and the battery management systems, and kind of as they're moving forward, bringing that technology. And that's the part that I have been pretty vocal about when we have any opportunity to speak about electric vehicles, is just that the people that are so against them right now because it doesn't make the noises, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's natural to fight change. It's natural to not want to learn something that's completely opposite of everything you've ever done. But I want people to understand that vehicle performance and working on your car, unless the EPA figures out a way to destroy it or something, it will not go away, because like these electric vehicles – You would be so surprised to find out how fast you can make these cars.
Oh, yeah. It's bonkers.
Oh, yeah. And the aftermarket support that will be there for it will be pretty significant as we go through. And there'll still Absolutely. Be the suspension parts and all the different yep. things. And what I love the most is as Teslas become more used and more apparent, you're going to probably find those parts available to you cheaper and cheaper. Yeah. And there's great resources if you have the budget right now, like companies like EV West, where you mm-hmm. can go and you can buy complete, you know, powertrains and all the accessories you would need to power it. And then there's cool channels like Rich Rebuilds.
Yeah.
That where he's been documenting this stuff for years, and Rich is really, really, really funny. So he's entertaining too. So
the ultimate troll build. I mean, that V8 conversion Tesla that he's doing.
So
like
good.
Nobody trolls Tesla harder than Rich. And
oh,
yet,
yeah.
like, who's rebuilt more Teslas than Rich? Probably nobody. So yeah,
right.
I love that guy's channel. I love his sense of humor. It's
oh,
brilliant.
He's so
stuff.
Funny.
And I actually, you know what? You know who else is selling EV conversion kits now too?
No, who?
GM Performance.
Oh, okay.
They are starting to offer that stuff. So they are getting in early as well.
Yeah.
There's no question it's the future of performance.
Right.
And I mean, I love the sound of an internal combustion engine. I love the
Me
mechanical
too.
Aspect of it. They're like, you know, giant watches in the sense that there's so many moving parts. There's so much interesting stuff going on there. I'll always have a combustion engine vehicle in my garage, but I'd also love to have an electric car. They're a bit out of my price range right now, but to do a conversion of like a classic Japanese car that I love with an EV powertrain in it, I think it's awesome. And I was skeptical before I drove them. I was one of those guys was like, it's not going to have any soul. It's going to be an appliance. But when I drove Sasha's Lotus and having since driven many Teslas at the racetrack, these things are fun, man. The acceleration is astronomical.
Yeah.
And they don't feel like appliances to me. They just change the game in the way they deliver their power. And yeah, they don't make the cool combustion engine noises, but there's still other noises going on that your senses are being, you know, tweaked by. Like you can hear more tire noise, which means if you're at the racetrack, you have a better idea what's going on at your contact patches. And there's still like an electric whir that you hear from the motor, especially in a conversion car where it's not like super isolated. Like
yeah.
in that Lotus, that motor is like right behind your head. And it sounds like you're, I don't know, like an electric jet airplane. It's this incredible like whirring noise back there. And it's very cool in its own way. So I'm not at all, you know, opposed to the, you know, sensory aspect of those conversions anymore. It's just a different kind of sensory experience. But to me, it's just as much fun. So I'm not at all skeptical about it anymore. I'm really excited to build one. And I wish we could fit one in the next year. And maybe we will at the end of 2022. We'll see how things go. But we definitely have that on our radar to do as soon as we can.
Well, yeah. And just to quickly speak on that, I'll say that one of the last videos that I did for the drive was that Tesla Swap E30 convertible.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
That mm-hmm. was one of the scariest cars I've ever been in. And mind you, I've been in like 800 horsepower, super snakes, and all sorts of crazy stuff. That car scared the living daylights out of me. It was absolutely wild.
The way those things build instant torque, I mean, you will get motion sickness from launching one of those things from 0 to 100. Like it literally moves the brain in your skull, and it's a yeah. violent experience. It's amazing. And with the ability to control that with electronics, I mean, we're just at the early stages here. The possibilities are really endless. And you can put a motor at each wheel and do all kinds of torque vectoring. I mean, man, there's a lot to look forward to. So, I don't think our hobby's going away anytime soon. It's just we might be playing with different kinds of powertrains.
Yeah, I think it's such a – like for those that are really still very opposed to it, I would say – not to get rid of what you've done, not to forget what you know, but embrace what's coming next, because
yeah.
you may find yourself, if you're open to the knowledge, and you know, to me, the best way I can equate this, and I was right on the brink, you know, I like photography. I was right on the brink of film photography and digital photography. And while most of my, you know, really good progression in photography came in a digital world, I had that knowledge of film, right? And things do carry over. They're not the same. You don't need to process them the same. You have to learn a new skill set. But if you're, you know, I think about some of the people that I've seen that really held on to film for a long time. And mm-hmm. at some point, they were like, okay, my stuff is crap. I need to throw this stuff out and get new stuff, right? But then they're behind the eight ball. So what I'm saying is don't get behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
You don't have to let go of what you have, but embrace what's coming, because that knowledge base may really come in handy for you. And if you waste the first, you know, part of it, you're not going to see the good progression pieces that you need to build that basic skill.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. And I think the photography analogy is a really good one. That transition from, you know, film to digital was something that a lot of photographers resisted. And you know, the guys that resisted too long got left behind.
Right.
Like digital, you know, dominates completely now. And for good reason. It's just so much easier to manipulate and, you know, do cool stuff with. And I think that's going to be true with electric motors too. And I mean, I think it's worth mentioning too, like there's so few moving parts in an electric motor. They're very simple. They're very reliable. You're going to have a lot less maintenance and upkeep to worry about from a powertrain perspective. And, you know, that might sound like a disincentive to some people, because some people probably like the maintenance aspect of car ownership. But like to me, it just means I can go and beat on this thing and have less to worry about. And I can focus more on tuning the chassis, tuning the suspension, you know, doing other things, learning how to use the software side of the electric powertrain, rather than the, you know, the mechanical side of it. So there, I mean, if you think about all the electric car companies that are emerging right now, it's like when the auto industry first happened with combustion engines. There was this explosion. Absolutely. There was hundreds of car companies, and then, you know, the weaker got, you know, got culled from the herd. And right now we're in that, you know, inventive stage where there's a ton of new companies popping up, and those companies are going to get merged, and some will die off, and some will emerge as, you know, the powerhouses of the future. And which leads me to my next point is, do we all go and buy Rivian stock when they go public? You know, because that could be the next Tesla stock for you profit hunters.
I think it's interesting, but don't keep this in mind too, folks. Ford owns a substantial piece of Rivian, so
as does Amazon.
Well, I can't buy Amazon. You know what I mean? I'd be at the shareholder meeting, like, yeah, I own Amazon stock. To be like, how many shares do you own? One. You know, like, I had two, but then like I needed to like get the puppy shots and stuff, so I had to sell one. You know, but yeah.
Oh, I mean that Amazon owns part of Rivian though. Amazon and Ford both own 5% of Rivian. I think it is.
No, I know. I think doesn't Ford own more than that?
I think I read 5% each, but maybe I misread it. And in any case, significant investment on both their parts.
And I think that Ford is an incredibly undervalued company for the IP that they have. I think that they are much further along in electric development and some of their builds than we're giving them credit for. It seems like builds like the new F-150 Lightning and stuff like that are now fully electric. I mean, I don't think people really appreciate the monumental piece to this, because they were really the first ones to take a platform that is one of the best-selling platforms in their segment and fully electrify it and offer it in a production sense right away.
Yeah.
And they're just like, that's a big testament if you really think about what that means, because all the work trucks, all the different things, they're saying, hey, look, it's ready, it's done. And I don't think they're getting enough credit for it. I think you could potentially see Tesla, GM, Ford really emerge as the new kind of big three.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, you could well be right. And I totally agree with you on Ford. What they're doing is amazing, and they're not getting enough credit for it. And I mean, to bring the F-150 out in a fully electric version is pretty stunning. And they're going to do it before Tesla brings out the Cybertruck.
Right.
I don't know if the Cybertruck's ever going to happen at this rate. And I mean, frankly, they took such a flyer on the styling. Like, yeah, it's cool and different, but how many people want to be seen driving around in this wedge versus like you know, going to the work site in an F-150 that happens to be electric.
Right.
I think they're going to sell a lot of those F-150s. And I think the Cybertruck, I don't know. I think they went a little too crazy on the design side. I really like the Rivian, though. I think the Rivian looks beautiful. And
I just saw one today. I literally just saw one today on the way to work. It's cool looking.
Yeah it is. And their tech is world class. And Motor Trend just did a big, like, 5-part video series on their YouTube channel about taking the Rivian, like, off-roading for, I don't know, like 3 weeks. They did a huge off-road trip in it. And they just gush about how good the car is, or the truck is. So I think it looks really promising that company is going to emerge as a huge force in the electric, you know, the electric car world. So they just announced they're going public soon. So that's why I brought up the whole, do we buy their stocks thing? But
anyway. If you know how to get the IPO, let me know.
Yeah, exactly. How do you get in on that?
You have the digits. You just, you know, swing.
I'll put you in touch with the right people. I got you covered.
Thank you. So listen, I think we can, I want to wrap up because what people don't understand is we have used Dave's time over the course of the last 3 weeks to film this podcast. It's a labor of love.
It's been an adventure.
And if Pete, if you're watching, he didn't really take that much time. You know, he popped in, popped out, but he went right back to work and really we didn't cost Speed Academy any time. So, you know, for Pete's eyes, for everybody else, we took a long time to get this thing done, and and I appreciate you guys always kind of being a supporter of ours the same way we're a supporter of yours.
Hey man, no problem. And it gave us time to just, you know, talk about other things while your tech department figured out how to record audio from 3 different channels and 2 different countries and the same time zone. At least we made it easy for them that way. But no problem.
I like the tech department. Listen, give my best to Pete. Give my best to the apple, banana, and the rectangle in the background. Tell them, you know, we're here if they need anything.
I will let them know. And if you guys need a little vitamin C or potassium in your diet, just let me know, and I'll send you a care package.
Yeah, I'm worried that has a lot of bad inflictions in it. So with that said, we'll let you go. Dave, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it. And hopefully we can, now that the border is kind of lessening up, we can head up and hang out with you guys soon.
That'd be great, man. Come up to the shop anytime and we'll take you for a rip in your soon to be Supra.
Don't start with me. Don't start with me. This is where it all goes bad, man. This is where it all goes bad.
Jay, now I have to hear him whine in the office about this for the rest of the day.
And we're so close. We just got a wiring specialties harness for it. The Link ECU is going in. I'm going to fire this puppy up and make like a super responsive 500 at the wheel. You're going to be leaving Teslas in the dust. I mean, you're going to be the hero of Jersey. You need this car in your life.
Listen, I'm just worried that the Canadian hoarder up there is gonna keep it for himself.
Man, prying a car out of Pete's hands is like trying to steal a baby from a new mother. It's almost impossible. So good luck to you, brother. Good luck to you.
Thanks, Dave. All right, we'll catch you later.
All right, take it easy, guys.
So that was, listen, I think, first off, I appreciate their time so much. I mean, we had just absolutely nothing but technical difficulties, and they seemed to always bring their head up in the middle of trying to finish the podcast with Dave. So I appreciate them very much. Speed Academy, I mean, listen, you all know who they are. You're probably coming here from a Speed Academy post or something. And listen, they're great people. And I've known Dave and Pete for 16, almost 16 years. And I've known them before, you know, they were the awesome stars that they are. They're great people. They're exactly like they are on camera. And they really have the knowledge base that can help you do some cool projects. So make sure you consume that content, especially as a library of reference for different builds.
100%.
Yeah. All right. We're finally getting out of here. Take care of yourself. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already. Do that whole like thing. It's fun to watch the numbers go up. And on top of that, we go live every Wednesday just before the podcast, 2 p.m. Eastern on Instagram and Facebook. We will catch you next time. Take care.